Black and Jew Podcast, episode 32, with the ever so wonderful Eric Da Silva here as our guest.
Hi, guys.
Co-host of the Bad Dads Podcast.
Oh, look at me. Look at the promotions and stuff.
Look at that. He edits his podcast.
Yeah,
which
I do.
Which I used to do.
Right.
But then I realized that I'm too lazy to do that, so
see,
I stopped.
I'm almost... We edit for totally different reasons. Like, you probably edit for like, there's a little bit of space here. I don't want to. I'm like, somebody could get fired if I put this.
Yeah. Or John could get in trouble.
I could get in trouble.
This could be used in a case against John.
There's specifically one episode that I had to remove, let's just say, somebody's name because legally he's not allowed to mention that person.
Yeah, and it's in his comedy, right?
Yeah, that's part of the divorce proceedings. I spent 4 hours editing this one episode just on that portion where he went on a tirade.
That episode. There's like all these like
it was so ridiculous. We got to the point where we just made it a joke where you just clearly knew the cutoff was there. It's like, so fuck you. Oh, and it would just be like laughing. It was great. It was great. So, but yeah, I'm sure different reasons. I was just saying.
Yeah. Well, I did edit it and then I'm like, you know what? This is taking a lot of time, so I just every week. So
that's great. You have all this technology and equipment to be as professional as possible. You just don't have the drive.
That sums up my entire approach to everything. You know, I think what it is for me is like everything that I do, I always like overdo it. Like if I do a sketch or something like that, like I always overdo it. I always like try to make it perfect. So it takes like a month to release a 1:45 sketch. So this is the one thing that I'm like, all right, I'm just going to try to make it good on the first shot and then just put it out there.
Look at you. You know? I wish I had that kind of either resolve for like, let's work really hard to make it or let's just, I am actually like, I don't want to put any time and effort into doing it, but I want it to be perfect when it comes out. And that's just, it's a flip side. You're better. Your way is better, I think. That's what I'm trying to say.
I feel like there's got
to
be a medium, you know? Because like you
And those people work 9-to-5 jobs. And they can find that level of like, hey, everything is well-rounded. They're happy. And they have a family already and everything's okay. Nobody's trying to like hate them. So yeah, I think those people exist. And they listen to us to go, let me hear how the other half sucks.
So then your podcast is very cathartic. Like it's like it lets them into like this glimpse.
We get about maybe like 3 emails a week from fans and it ranges from how dare you to thank you for putting some voice to how I feel out there. And it's because we talk about dads from every angle.
Yeah,
there's a lot of dads who've got a lot of bad beats and they're like, thanks for just voicing out our shit there, dude. It makes me feel better that I can listen to that. And other dads are like, I thought I had a rough. I'm sorry for you guys, but it makes me feel better. I appreciate everything I got now. I'm like, yeah, that's good. It's very cathartic because we just rage about nonsense.
So. Yeah, I get one email a week from my aunt telling me how much she loved the podcast and giving some commentary on it about how great it was. But other than that,
if I can do anything during this taping, it's to make your aunt send an email like, I don't know if I'm going to listen anymore.
That's kind of hard to do, you know. As long as I'm on it, you know. If I just shut up and it was you two, then she'll clock out.
I'm gonna lean on some heavy anti-Jew conspiracy guys. So it might happen. Am I?
No, she's a self-loathing Jew, so she believes it too.
Now she should listen to my podcast. Is what I'm saying. Bad Dad's podcast.
Your podcast is really funny though, and I think maybe it's just the fact that you and John are funny, and then the editing on top of it makes it so you only have the good bits. So it's one of the few podcasts that actually makes me laugh out loud. Usually podcasts do not do that for me. But
good. I appreciate that. Me and most of the time we spend editing is like I said. It's for either legal reasons or me and John are arguing so intensely about something so stupid that it eats up so much time. We're like, we have way better, more interesting shit to get to. We should just take all that out. But we just go back and forth. But that's part of the fun of the podcast.
It's just shit show that is the Bad Dads podcast.
The void of two angry dads have nothing better to do. So that's exactly it.
I think me and Reggie, we might be the most amicable podcast in Miami because you got Woo Bro
right
with Neri, Steph, and Neri and Xander always butting heads. But for us it's like an NPR discussion of like gender roles in society.
Let me tell you something. You guys even outside the podcast, you guys are literally the nicest people I've ever in the comedy world that I've met. Usually when I meet nice people, they're horrible comics. I mean, you guys are I'm like, wow, they're so nice. Too bad they eat a dick every time a microphone's in front of their face. But you guys are actually generally good, startup comics, and you're very nice. And I don't understand. I assume you've murdered a hobo and you've made a pact to just keep an
just
eye
together.
On each other.
No, getting just, these windscreens. Getting these windscreens. We just murdered a hobo.
That's it. Like, sometimes you got it. That's how you initiate a podcast. You make a runaway cry.
Yeah, you got it. You got to make a. You got to torture a few hobos to be good. You know.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just going to be bombing. Right.
That's, yeah. You got it. You got it.
So when did you torture your first hobo?
Well, are you talking comedy or podcasting? Two different things.
Through the hobo.
You're podcasting hobo.
Podcasting hobo. I didn't want to start podcasting at all. It's just one of those things where everyone's like, well, you got to start every comic as a podcast now, so you got to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck, I don't want to do this. And I was in New York at the time, and it was going to be me and Oney Perez and this other comic called Nori Davis, mm-hmm. who, if you don't know him, he's blowing up. He was just in Montreal, New Faces. He's great. Check him out.
I hear no one gets paid for New Faces.
Well, you don't get paid there. You get paid after you leave.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You walk out with like bookings and agents and deals, and you're like, hooray. And that's basically how, once you're in Montreal, you're set. If you're not, if you don't walk away with some sort of tour deal thing from New Faces, you get on unrepresented and you walk away with an agent that's now going to get you tours and deals and club stuff.
So it's worth the money.
Oh, yeah. It's worth eating a dick for a week if you walk out nice for 8 months out of the year. So yeah.
I think about all the horrible shows that I do for free.
And think about that.
Yeah, I do all those horrible shows for free. To do a great festival and then get bookings from it, I think I'm okay
think
with
that.
Think
of it this way. Like, at worst, they're going to say, listen, we're going to book you to work with this headliner who's horrible for 6 months at the improvs. So you got now maybe 2 to 3 weeks out of the month packed, paid at the improvs. Yeah, I'll eat a dick for a week.
Yeah.
No problem. Do that shit. I'm perfectly all right with that.
Literally. Whatever. Fuck it.
Depends what kind of clout you got. I don't know what's going on.
It's like, you know, you really got to literally suck someone's dick. Something. All right.
Listen,
you know?
In Canada, who's going
to
tell, right?
I'm comfortable enough with my sexuality that I could suck a dick.
It's like Comedy Vegas. No one talks about what happens there. You just walk around going, I got a manager. And everyone's happy now.
Watch it down with some poutine and some maple syrup, some Canadian whiskey. Whatever. You're good, you know?
But so I came up with the idea with the podcast. But then Nori was just starting to get some things going, so he couldn't do it. And then Oney got picked up by another podcast before I could settle down. So I was like, all right, idea that went away. And then when it came down here, met up with John, I had met John briefly in New York, but then he moved to Florida.
Yeah.
And I never really got to know him. And I've known Oney for a much longer time. And so when I was down here, I started, you know, me and John started getting on the same shows. And, you know, I saw John's act and I was like, we should do something together. And John at first didn't want to do the podcast. He's like, I don't know, podcast about being dads and you're called bad dads. We're not bad guys. I'm like, it's not called the Punch Your Baby in the Face podcast. It's called Bad Dads. Like, you and me are not the best guys and dads. We try our best, but sometimes our best just come off as bad. So I think it's really funny. It sounds like a cool name. And then we worked it out and then announced this thing. So
I don't think that a real bad dad would have the self-awareness to evaluate himself as a father.
Exactly.
You know, at all. Like, they'd just be like, what am I supposed to do? Pull out? Like, whatever.
Yo, fuck these kids podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's, you know, no dad. Because I feel like, you know, the people that are really bad at things, truly bad at things, just have no self-awareness. Like I always say, like when I see like a really hack comic, I've never seen like a hack comic full of self-doubt.
Have you ever seen someone at karaoke sound horrible and walk away shy and embarrassed? They're going like, I'm a champion.
Yeah, exactly.
Murdered that song. Yo, where's my deal? It's the worst. You're the goddamn worst. I actually wanted to say, the last time you and me talked, I'm not talking to Mike, I'm talking to you, Reggie.
Gotcha.
We had done a show at Taurus together.
Yeah.
And you asked me to bring this up at the podcast, and this is me not knowing how to do it right, so I'm just going to shoehorn this conversation.
Go for it.
I think you were there that night, too.
Yeah, I was there.
If you did a Taurus, there's a bar in Coconut Grove, and every Thursday night they do a comedy show by Freddie Sevens. Great room. Mm-hmm. Check it out. The problem with Taurus, or what I've been told the problem to me, it's a perk, is that sometimes some people get there and they get real shitty real fast.
Oh, yeah.
And they get real mouthy. Mm-hmm. And it fucks up the vibe a lot of comics. And there's one particular night that I felt very bad for is you're on stage, you're working your shit, and you're doing really good. You got the crowd on you. And then there was these two older broads.
and the bald dude.
And the bald dude. And the bald like, dude. The broads are probably in their late 40s, mid 50s. The bald dude in his like early 40s, but he is jacked. He looks like Mr. Clean with yeah. roids in South Beach. Like, that's how he is. He's just a jacked
white
dude.
Shirt. Three buttons unbuttoned, you know.
Showing flex and all the whole at all fucking times. And they're just drunk and loud for no goddamn reason.
Yeah.
Now, how long have you been standing up for?
Right now, 2 years.
2 years. So you're still cutting your teeth.
Yeah.
So you're trying to go in there and they're getting mouthy with you. And you're doing your best to kind of like smack, stay on your side. Let me just finish my act. Don't get weird. And they just kept coming at you. And I got really mad because they really fucked up your set. I think the last 3 minutes, you held your own well. But it upset me that they would do that to another comic. And so after you got off, there was like one more comic than me, but you left before I got on. I made it my mission to go after these three people in the most... Here's the thing. When I perform, I'm usually drunk or stoned or some version of that combination.
Yeah.
And it makes me very angry when people don't appreciate comedy, and it makes me angrier when there's dicks who are fucking up other comics' acts, and then I get mouthy. Mm-hmm. So I don't even do my act. I just hammer in it into the people that anger me.
Yeah.
And I hammered in so hard that, if you remember, there was one chick there who was just showing her tits.
Yeah, it was okay, so they're configured in the two women and the bald dude. The one in the middle was right. flashing every comic.
Right.
And like that combined with the bald dude's like, see, heckling I can handle, but when it's incoherent heckling and you're trying to like, I try and twist what they're saying right. to turn it against them, to make them like, you know, just make them fumble like right. on what they're saying. But he just like did these off like drunk
there was nothing to hold on to.
There's nothing to hold on to.
But that that makes me angrier because you're a very clever guy. Both of you guys are. I'm not trying to suck anybody's dick here.
They suck my dick all day.
Oh,
all
right, no problem.
You haven't listened to the end of this podcast.
No, I haven't. It's gonna end up just out of holding hands and crying. But it made me really upset, so I just started going into it. And at one point she tries to be, you know, herself and flashes. And in the middle of flashing, she's yapping something coherently. I go, would you just shut the fuck up and just show your old tits to everyone else so you can leave, because no one here gives a shit anymore. Like, showing your tits is like going to an old war memorial. We're just looking at it going, oh my God, a lot of things happened that day. I was sad now, but back in the day, it must have been crazy. And then she got mad and started telling him, like, fuck this guy and everything. And he's like, and I go, listen, dude, if you're going to do anything, you have to show your dick at this point, because she's showing him your tits. So there's no, and he tries to go for it. I'm like, go for it, dude. Let's see how big your dick literally is. And then he's like, come on, bro. Like mad, but like a Matthew McConaughey mad. Yeah. Like, hey, bro, all right, let's do this. And I literally said, listen, you're bigger and stronger than me. You will definitely kick my ass. But there's one undeniable factor. Everybody here likes me more than you. And he literally stopped and put his head down and walked away sad. And the two dumb whores followed. And
oh, my God.
And I did that for you, is what I wanted to say. Because no young comic deserves that kind of bullshit. It makes me angry.
And here on the Black Engine Podcast, I want to say thank you.
Oh, yeah,
thank
sure,
you for
officially.
Caring.
We actually made
people.
This plaque. I was there.
Yeah, it's a Black and Jew podcast logo carved into some bread.
That sounds that's pretty. It's pretty official, guys. It's toasted and everything. It's fantastic.
Yep. Toasted black. It's like the toast Virgin Mary.
That is. You know, that is.
Except in your likeness. It took 300 pieces of toast to get that randomly.
That
to
should
happen.
Be our new logo, by the way. Like if we ever want to rebrand, just like. Put the logo on some toast.
That's a good way. Like, I don't know if you guys saw this, but apparently God loves us and butter. So that's pretty major right there.
He made a piece of bread. A piece of it could be meta. It could be God, like a piece of bread with bread, piece of bread toasted into it, and then on that toasted in bread, the Black and Chew podcast.
This is why nobody trusts God. Like, he's just never straight with you. He's like a really bad guy you hooked up with, and then you're trying to like, maybe you want to have dinner, and God's like, yeah, I'll message you on Facebook. Turns out he doesn't have a Facebook, and then, you know, makes the Virgin Mary appear on a Tostito. You know, fuck God, dude.
I feel like God just treats everyone on Earth like we're interning for him, and I don't like that at all. I was like, ooh, could you give me some coffee? I'm not learning anything. I know, but I really need some coffee. Shit, dude.
This is unpaid. I need a.
And then you get to heaven, and then it's like, ah, you know, actually, we filled the position. So,
yeah.
So you just can just wait in limbo over here. We'll call you.
How do you feel about mail? Everything comes online. Yeah, I know.
Work your way up. You have eternity. Don't worry about it. So, Eric.
Yeah.
When did you start comedy? I feel like I don't know that much about your backstory, and I'd like to know.
I like to keep myself mysterious, much like a cowboy that comes in, saves the day, and then leaves.
Swings open the doors of the saloon. Yeah. You're fat. You're stupid. Those tits suck. Boom, done.
You've been doing it for a while, right?
I've been doing it for, professionally, I've been doing it for 4 years. Altogether, I think it's been about 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so it was 6 years before unprofessionally?
Yeah.
Awesome. That makes me feel less shitty about my career.
Well, no, I mean, I'll take this into consideration. I quit 3 times.
Oh.
Quit so 3 times.
Let me have that. Let me be like, all right, Mike, you got 6 more years before you can start feeling really bad about not getting booked.
My very first open mic ever was, I was 17. And it was had some people come out, and after the show, they brought me. I was going, this is his first time, Eric DeSilva, and I went on stage, and I had a button shirt with a tie and jeans, and I had long hair, so I had a ponytail. Like, I was trying to be like, this is what I thought comedy looked like.
Yeah.
So I get off stage, and as I'm walking towards the back where all the other comics are waiting. And this hand reaches out of the darkness and grabs my tie and spins me around. And it's this dude. I have no idea who the fuck this dude is. I'm like, holy shit, I'm going to fight some dude right now in a comedy club. Mm-hmm. And he's like, there's no fucking way this is your first time. And I go, I swear to God it is. I thought that was a reason for the fight. And I go, I swear to God,
oh my God,
it is. And then he lets go of me. He goes, stick with it, kid. You got something. Turns out it was the headliner for the night. I never saw the guy ever again. He was just like a lone comic supporter. And then he went into the show, and that was it. I don't remember his act. It just, that moment stuck with me. And then I was getting really excited to go do stand-up again. And the girl my girlfriend who I was trying to fuck said, I think we should start fucking. But you have to be around all times. Whenever I want to fuck, that's when we fuck. I'm like, I want to fuck you all the time, so let's do that. Mm-hmm. So I just didn't do comedy anymore because I wanted to be like a fireman. Like, when she's like, it's on, like, I wake up and I go do the thing. Uh-huh. And I didn't do...
And where was this? Was this in New York?
This was in Miami. Because I grew up in New York, but I was only in New York until I was 10 years old. Then I spent 2 years in Brazil.
Okay.
And then from 12 to 24, I was here.
Gotcha.
So for probably like 3-4 years, I didn't do stand up.
You were just fucking for 3-4 years.
Just fucking, well, trying to fuck, waiting to fuck. Crazy, please, can I see it? And then, like, when I was in college, my freshman year of college, I did another open mic at a bar, and every comic was eating a dick. And when I went on, I actually got the crowd to like pay attention and laugh.
Yeah.
And all the comics were like, hey, it's really good. You should do this more often. I was like, cool. And then I met this girl after the show. And then I was like, I'm going to start fucking this girl. And then I just started trying to fuck this girl. And it wasn't until my sophomore year in college where I was dating a girl already, and we were fucking, so I didn't have to like try to fuck her so hard. And I got kicked out of my philosophy class because my teacher had asked me, it was public speaking. And the teacher said, your assignment is to take an unpopular subject and debate for it. That's your speech debate class thing. So I chose why Mein Kampf was right. And my teacher heard the title and she left. And I go, so did I win? Because apparently it's so unpopular. You don't even want to hear my position. And she just kicked me the fuck out. And it had nothing to do with Jews. It just had to do with going after one specific group eliminates your competition. And then it starts progressing. It makes perfect sense.
Was she Jewish?
Oh, yeah, she was Jewish. And I was like, it has nothing to do with being Jewish. It's just about eliminating a group of people. Maybe my choice of words were not the best. But... Well, she kicked me out, and my girlfriend goes, listen, if you're going to be a professional asshole, you should maybe be a professional asshole. Like, find where you can be an asshole. And she's like, I was like thinking about maybe being a DJ or something. Like, maybe the radio. Like, hey, you bunch of schmucks, it's time for it. And then someone says, you know, you used to do stand-up before. You should do it again. So I went in, and I did another open mic. But the club... This is back in the day when there was only like 3 clubs, but they're all different owners. So nobody was really working together.
Yeah.
So the manager, the night manager, was in the back and he'd watch the open mic.
Mm-hmm.
And because he wanted to watch his guys develop new material and see what new comics are out there. So he liked me And he's like, you know, I think you got something. And I said, you have a veil. I'm like, oh, like what, to come over? Like, what is this, a veil? And he's like, no, like, when can you get booked? And I'm like, oh, I'll check my calendar. And that was air quotes, everybody. So I'll check my calendar, see what happens. So he sent up some dates that I just had nothing going on. And he booked me for a show. And for the first week that I was emceeing, I couldn't.
And where was this? What club?
It was an Uncle Funny's.
Okay.
That's how far back. It was like the year that Uncle Funny's was closing, or the year uh-huh. before it closed. And I could not remember the feature or the headliner's name.
Oh my God.
I was like, hey, get it for the better of that. Like, I literally went up the whole thing. It sounded something like, and then he goes, hey, my name's Phil. Like, just Jesus. Murdering. And so after the second night, they fired me. They're like, you, I'm sorry, you're gone for the rest of the week. And I was like, I totally understand. But he goes, but keep coming back. If you keep writing and you keep working, I'll give you another chance. And that was the process of that. And mm-hmm. then after about a year of that, maybe a year and a half, Rich Voss, I got to MC for Rich Voss,
mm-hmm.
And Kathy Madigan. This is after year one of Last Comic Standing, when Voss blew up, and literally people were bringing ironing boards for him to sign, because that was his thing. He did whatever he was at the house by himself. He would just iron. That was like his decompressing.
Mm-hmm.
So people used to bring ironing boards for him to sign, because that was his shtick, apparently. And it's not even his act, but that's just the thing he did. And so Rich is a recovery. So after every show, he's like, where do you want to go out to eat tonight? I was like, you know, just get fast, not fast, we get minis, we go hang out, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just start rapping, and he goes, so how's Miami? And I go, it is what you saw. And he goes, yeah, you got to hit them over the head sometimes. Like, they're not really like with you every step of the way.
Yeah.
And I go, I have the problem saying that. And I go, I'm very weird left thinking. So sometimes we have huge disconnects. And he goes, well, you know, you can always just go to New York and figure what's up. I mean, that never even occurred to me. Like,
yeah,
New York, why would you do that? Like, how does that? He goes, yeah, if you feel that you're kind of going a little bit smarter than what they're doing, go to New York and figure out if it's you or if it's the crowd, and figure out, go with you. Maybe you'll pick up, maybe you won't. And so I was like, fuck it. So went to New York and, you know, figured out what the case was. And the only reason I even came back to Florida to begin with was after I was getting ready to record my first hour, I every time I lived in Miami and I performed, I could do good in Fort Lauderdale, I'd do good in West Palm, I could do good all the way to Georgia. I could not figure out Miami audiences.
Yeah.
Just did not understand what the fuck these people wanted to hear. Like, why is it everyone else thinks it's funny and you guys are like, no, sorry, you suck. Just could not get a handle on it.
That's something that Kurt Braunholer expressed once on his podcast. It's called Stop Podcasting Yourself. I forget, but he was just saying he used to open up for this traveling movie.
Mm-hmm.
So he was at O Cinema and he opened up for the movie and it was just not clicking. Like,
right.
No, nothing. Like, it just, like, it's almost, he expressed that it's almost as if the Miami crowd does not know that a comedy show is going on.
Yeah. Oh, and they don't know how to express disdain or pleasure from the show they're watching.
Yeah. Like, when you see, like, I'm sorry, no. When you see, like, a recording on, like, you know, Comedy Central, people know when to clap, or, like,
right.
People
yeah.
know that, oh, I'm going to set up this, set it up, set it, and then, oh, you say, oh, or, like.
And they also know that when you're a comedian, you're going to say things that maybe you don't necessarily mean 100%, but the punchline is the payoff to hearing the story in the first place.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, when you're up north in, you know, New York, Boston, Jersey, there's an understanding of, like, okay, I'm gonna let you say your fucking weird, crazy, fucked up thing, because I'm sure that punchline is gonna be worth it. If it isn't, then we have a problem. But if it is, okay, move on to your next bit.
Oh no!
Sorry. Oh yeah, and South Florida, it's like if you even hit a subject matter that is against their grain, there's an emotional, well, how dare you, sir? And like, you haven't even heard what the fuck I'm gonna say. I might have the cleverest pedophile joke in the world, which I do. And so you're just making this weirder on yourself when I hit the punchlines.
Yeah.
So it's a very weird. But that's, I figured that's the thing. Like, I need to come back to Miami to record this hour. And if the hour works, fantastic. If the hour works, it's not ready to get recorded yet. I literally was like, this is going to be the final. Doesn't matter where I've been. Yeah, I went to Canada. I went to these shows on the West Coast. I was in Texas. Everything was great. And I go, I got to record this in Florida. None of these other shows matter. I got Miami. I have to make that Miami crowd work.
It's like the Joker with Batman.
Yeah, it really
like
is.
Like the Joker just wants to give it to Batman.
Yeah, you go, I don't give a fuck about Robin. Commissioner Gordon, go fuck himself. I need the bat.
You know, it's funny that you said that because exactly what you're talking about. I saw an example of that when Giannis Pappas was doing the Fort Lauderdale Improv. And he's like, you know, lesbian couples, they always get along. And someone goes, no, they don't. And he's like, no, obviously they don't. They do fight. He's like, and people kept like he kept bringing up these rhetoric. Like the punchline was, you know, that, oh, we're both cycling together.
Right.
I'm not really mad at you. He's like, see, it was funny until you ruined the punchline.
Right.
It got to the point where he had to be like, he was just like, are you kidding me? Like people just would not.
They
be
don't
okay.
understand.
It's a rhetorical argument. Like it's
into
totally,
a story. Like I'm trying to set up a mood here, and your dumminess is like, I have answers. Like, no, you don't. You don't have answers.
He had to point up to the improv sign. He's like, it's a comedy club. Yeah.
I think a lot of it. Well, my theory is that like, okay, so stand up comedy is like. It's purely like an American art form. Like it started here.
Right.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It was created here like jazz.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And just like jazz, you know, you have the moments where it's improvised, where it isn't, and then, you know, where it's structured. Mm-hmm. Right. So there's very few representation of like stand up comedy, like as just stand up as we know it in other countries. Like London has a great stand up scene.
Right.
There's literally only like one major comedian in Colombia.
Right.
And like any of those variety shows you see on Univision or Telemundo have like one comedian a month, and it's usually like the same guy, and he's a host or something.
You're wrong about that. As a Brazilian, my dad watches Brazilian TV incessantly. It just has to. And Brazilian stand-up comedy is just starting to get to beyond the Catskill version of comedy in the 20s and 40s.
So beyond that vaudeville.
They're just starting to develop storytelling and voices, because most of the time it's like two Jews walk in a bar and the bartender said, get out. Ha! Da, 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 da. Like that's literally how, or like girls with big tits. Yes, please. Like that's how comedy is. Yeah. And it was just like, there's more to just like fart jokes. And don't get me wrong.
Speak for yourself.
Well, let me tell you something. There's nothing wrong with a fart joke. Fart jokes are brilliant in itself. But when all you have is fart jokes, that literally like is like being in South Beach. And I'll tell you the problem with South Beach. Too much big asses, too much pretty faces, not enough brains, or girls with big tits. That's the problem. I like two things that beach does not provide. It's very disappointing to me all the time. So that's how I feel. Latino stand-up comedy. It's all the things that it is good in doses, but it shouldn't be the norm. It should be a variety of different things that I want to partake mm-hmm. in. And now they're starting to get to that, which is cool. But you're right. It's huge baby steps.
Yeah.
And it takes forever for them to move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
So I understand that. Yeah.
So you're saying that it's like it doesn't really vibe with the South American crowd because they're not used to stand-up comedy?
Sorry. Yeah. Like a lot of, like, if you look at like what they do comedically.
Yeah.
Like,
it's old dudes dressed as kids and chicks with big tits dressed as nurses. That's basically what Spanish comedy
is. If you've seen like there's like in Sábado Gigante they always have like the sketch segment, and like the sketches are just like as he described. Like it's like some old man is like, I have a hot nurse. Whoa.
Yeah.
Getting into a fumble, you know? Like that's a lot of it. And then also you got, you know, people cross-dressing or like...
Yeah.
Cross-dressing is hugely funny. Like it's still like, oh man, this is Money in the Bank. Dude, as a girl, ha-ha, who's going to see this coming? Everyone saw it coming.
And there's no, like, you don't have a Eugene Merman in Latin America.
Oh, no, no, no. In fact, that guy would probably be branded as a witch.
Like,
Eugene Merman has died because he did not float, and according to the laws of witchcraft.
Like, it's so funny. Whenever you watch, like Hispanic shows, like the Sábado Gigantes, when they cut to the audience reactions, it's just a bunch of people look mildly amused at best. Yeah. It's like, oh, these are things moving. Like, there's no, like, hey, that was really funny. I've never seen laughter. From a crowd when they cut to the crowd. It's always like, oh, these are things.
It's like, look, a hot nurse.
That's how exactly I feel a lot of times originally the South Florida comedy crowd was, which is if you weren't doing like over the top black humor or the simplest poopy peepee jokes.
Yeah.
South Florida would just check out going, I don't get any of this. Why are you even talking about God is a joke? No, sir. You're going to hell for that.
Yeah, exactly. It
was no. And
I didn't get confirmed to hear this bullshit.
Yeah, but they're getting there. There's been a leap forward because of the alternative comedy scene that's grown in Florida, South Florida, which is very impressive because I don't know if I would have gone to New York as fast as I did if there was a speak and a vibes and a tourist. I think I would have stayed a little bit longer because it would have been a place where you could have engaged more. Mm-hmm. And the club setting was very much like you either hit the notes you need because it's a club setting, you know?
Yeah.
It makes sense, but I don't think I would have, if I had other alternatives and outlets for the kind of comedy that I liked at the time.
Yeah.
I don't think if I would maybe would have stayed a little longer. It just developed a little more. But I think you guys are very lucky to have those options to kind
of. Yeah, it seems like there's been I haven't been in the scene for very long, but it seems like there's been kind of a boom in mics and opportunities like that.
We've had recently. Hannibal Buress came and performed here, and that was a bang out show.
Yeah.
For the two nights he came down, people showed up.
Right.
Like it was. He's a big name, understandably, but like. You can't just go up to anybody. Hannibal, you want to talk about, there was an actual crowd that he could draw and generate from here.
That's the thing, too. That's the worst part about South Florida, that there is a legitimately smart comedy audience, but they think, oh, I'm not going to go out because Miami's out there.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying? Like, you have at least 250 people in Miami that are the greatest comedy audience of all time. They are ready to laugh at your cleverest, intellectual, slightly delivered material to your over-the-top hammer fist. They're ready for all that. They just don't want to go out there because they don't want to deal with the bald dude with the old chick with flashing his tits, the people who don't understand how stand-up comedy works, or just being out in the fucking heat. They don't want to deal with any of that shit.
Or finding a parking space in Midtown late at night.
Like, fuck that. I'm just going to watch Comedy Central and wait until somebody that I legitimately know is funny and catch that.
And a lot of people don't. I think a lot of people just don't know that stand-up comedy's out there for free. You know? Like, I didn't know about any room. The only room I knew about when I started was Casa just because I worked with Daniel's sister. And I remember when they started that room, and I'm like, well, I need somewhere to do comedy. The only place I know to do is Casa de Jaja, so I just did it there. But I had no clue that there was all that stuff available.
Danny Riskin, one of the unsung heroes of stand-up comedy in South Florida. That motherfucker has so many rooms and such a funny. He actually featured for me this past weekend over at the Have Not Show at Open Stage. Such a funny guy. So if you're in South Florida, if you see Danny Riskin anywhere. Daniel Ruskin, check him out. Very funny guy.
Yeah.
Little shout out.
He is, man. He's done good things for the comedy scene,
Yeah.
And he's had Casa forever, know?
Wasn't it 4 years?
Since 2000. Like I think it's longer than that.
It's 4 years, six, maybe?
Six, something. Five.
He literally, this show this past weekend is ample proof of what we're talking about. The crowd was so almost resistant to having a good time. Like you got tickets, whether it was paid for or
free. At the Have Not Show?
At the Have Not Show. Uh-huh. It was a sold out crowd.
Yeah.
And so you're there to see a comedy show.
Yeah.
Whether it's free or paid, it was told to you, this is a comedy show. Would you like to come? And the answer was yes. Sold out. And they were just like, I don't know. And I'm like, how do you not go to a comedy show wanting to laugh?
Yeah.
It's just like, maybe if you try better, that's sort of a thing. So like when I got on, I literally just pulled the stool out and I sat down and I looked at the audience for like 2 minutes. I didn't say a word. Just looked at them. And they started to like laugh among themselves and they tried to like create an applause break. And I just kept looking at them. And then when it got to this most awkwardness, I go, see how weird it feels when we do that shit to you? Yeah, maybe you should just enjoy yourselves a little more.
We just blew it out of the water.
Yeah, and that was the first laugh that I went, oh, okay, maybe we've been a bunch of
cunts.
Was
that at the beginning of your set?
The beginning of the set, yeah. That was the first 2 minutes, just me sitting down looking at them
almost
for
like
2 minutes.
Comedy here is treated like magicians everywhere. Like we want to dismantle whatever the fuck you're doing right now. Sorry. What was that? You said something about plants and pumpkins. Nah, I'm not.
Ruskin had in the middle of one of his bits. This is like a word he had in his setup that I thought was hysterical. And he goes, I don't want to be apropriate. And he literally went, ha! Like I hawed out loud for apropriate. I thought it was a very clever use of words. And I heard a woman look at her party, like, in shock, goes, did he just say appropriate? Like, she was offended he mispronounced the word. I go, no, stupid. He's making fun of what the word. Shut up. You're everything I hate in life. It's just, you're the worst.
Yeah. I think Miami can be kind of a self-serious city sometimes.
Yeah,
too. Yeah, like, goddamn. Like, I used to work in nightlife, and that is the biggest group of self-serious people you'll ever meet in your entire life. And there's a lot of that in Miami. And I just could totally see that. Like, if you ever want to find a place with the most amount of people with no sense of humor whatsoever, go to a nightclub.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody there. Like, so. It's funny. I feel like music sometimes, the music scene can be the opposite of comedy. Right? Because comedy, you're trying to break down these social structures and norms. And with music, it's like you have to pretend like this thing that this person doing is not the most ridiculous, moronic thing in the entire world.
If
you know?
Anytime there's a DJ playing at a club where he's the draw, I'm like, oh, good. There's a human iPod that we really want to see. This is exactly who. That Mouse 5?
Dead Mouse.
He literally said, he goes, I'm lucky to be famous. Like, it's the mask. Like, there's nothing I do that's specifically unique that no one else could do without this system. And he's, I go, thank you. One guy who just said, fuck it. It's just a gimmick that got me here.
Do you know, in 2008, I actually interviewed Deadmau5 for this magazine, this electronic music magazine I was working for. And because I really like electronic music. Like, I like seeing good DJs. I can understand the perception of them being human iPods. But like Deadmau5, it was so interesting talking to him because he's like, yeah, you know, he's like, they call me a DJ, but I'm not a DJ. I'm just like a guy who produces music, but they have to brand me as a DJ. So because people don't understand what I am.
Right.
Yeah. And at the time, he's like, you know, right now they're not letting me bring any lighting or any setup like that. So right now I have a very limited workspace. But in the future, just wait, I'm going to actually have like a really nice setup. And like now he's finally doing the thing he wanted to do. Because he's a great producer. Like he's very good at it. But he's not a DJ, you know? Like,
right.
I feel like DJs, and I've talked about this on another podcast, that DJs are the stand-up comedians in the music world because no one understands them.
Right.
And no one understands, like, what actually goes into it. Because, like, seeing a DJ for an hour at Ultra Music Festival is, like, a joke. But it's like, you want to see, that's like seeing someone do a 5-minute set.
Right.
But like most DJs, I won't see one unless I can see him for 3 hours minimum, you know?
That's insane.
Yeah. And it's like, and that's like minimum. There's some, there is this one night that they used to bring into Miami. It was called Dig Deeper. This DJ Danny Howells, I saw him do it in London. He DJed from 10 p.m. till 7 a.m. the next morning, just him, nobody else. And the whole thing about being a DJ is like, you got to respond and react to how the crowd is feeling. And like, I've seen DJs have crowds that were just like so tepid to what they were doing. And they had to pull out these crazy, they had to go out and like funk and disco with soul and then bring it back to Madonna and then put in some tech house and then move it back to techno, you know? And like, I've seen some real good shit.
It's almost like collecting apples, like with your arms.
Yeah. It's like it's
all
like,
right, here, I got the Madonna crowd. I got the tech crowd. Okay. Got the funk, got the soul. All right. Now we can all be here together.
I've seen like crazy things. And I think of it in the same way, because when people think of a DJ, they think of like, it's how people thinking of comedy and thinking about Jeff Dunham. They're like, oh, that's that. It's like, no. There's genius out there. You just have no idea because you've never been exposed to it before, you know? But I understand, because if you have DJs like that like are at that level, like Tiesto or something, like he is a human iPod. He doesn't even care. I talked to a DJ that knows Tiesto personally, and he's like, mate, I know Tiesto. I don't even think Tiesto likes Tiesto's music. Like, look at how bored he is. But he gets paid $70,000 for an hour and a half, you know, so.
Mountains of coke and whores. Just...
But say no to that.
But a lot of people don't appreciate that. They're like, oh, this is a big name. I'm gonna go see him.
Yeah, and that's how they treat comedy in South
Florida. Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh, there's a big name. Like, it's crazy. Like, me and Oni just finished talking about this. One of the last episodes of my show, where South Florida comedy clubs do not support South Florida comedians.
Yeah,
like it's crazy. Like. Before the Miami closed down, but even now, like the West Palm and the Fort Lauderdale, they like who they like.
Yeah.
Which is their two favorite features, maybe three.
Mm-hmm.
And then MC is, they treat MCing as a reward to their sales team, whoever got the most numbers, you get to MC that week. I'm like, that's not how you develop a stand-up comic. That's like, you should get like, hey, here's a $50 gift card to Applebee's. That's what you should get for selling the most tickets. Not like, hey, you get to entertain a crowd of strangers for 10 minutes. Hopefully the show doesn't eat a dick. Have fun. Like, that's what it feels like. Yeah. And then I found out that in Fort Lauderdale, in the Orlando and the Tampa Improv, I think it's like once every 3 months, they invite Bud and the people from the Improv to see a showcase of their local guys, and they pick 2 to 4 guys.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
To get into their feature program, starting at the Funny Bones, maybe at the Improvs. But that's, they're like, okay, now you're in, we start working you because we like, and they're literally calling a stable of comics.
Yeah.
Every time a guy gets picked, he's gonna be a better comic, he's gonna get more work, he's gonna go on the road, and he's gonna say, oh, there's like, this club helped me out. You're my home club. I'm always going to come back. I'm going to bring whatever clout I get, I bring to you. Mm. Every other comic who's not paid is going to work harder to try to be the guy who gets picked next time there's a round.
Yeah.
That's how you develop a scene. That's how you develop stronger, better comics. It's South Florida just doesn't make sense to me sometimes.
Yeah. I went to, when I was in LA, I went to Flappers. And
Flappers is a good club.
Yeah. I asked Richie, like Forrest told me to get in contact with Richie and be like, hey, you know, maybe like, do you have an open spot? And he's like, you know, you gotta come to they have an audition open mic.
Right.
Right. And he's like, you got to go to that. And I thought that was awesome. Cause it's like, you just go to this. Oh, like, it's not like just, it's not purely done through political maneuvering. It's like you go and you perform. And if you're good enough, they ask to book you. And then they asked to book me, which was cool. But cool. But you know, that's a cool way that you can work your way from the ground, like, instead of like having to go all through these weird channels to try to get
like jump point. It's not,
right. Yeah.
It's not like what they, sorry for interrupting, but it's not like what they do here where it's just like contest, guys.
Right.
You want a contest, which, you know, I'm not going to knock because Last Comic Standing is a contest, but then again, you get stage time and show time. And right. People like Doug Benson didn't win, but right. he had the most highlight reels and like people got to know him.
Right.
But here, you know, it's just like, we'll just have a contest. That's how we do it. Contest makes sense for comedy, right, guys?
See, but that's the thing is that it's not really a contest. It's a bringer show that whoever he brings the most people gets cheered on. And then they're like, oh, because you made us so much money, we're going to give you 6 weeks worth of work in 6 months. So you get $600, which is maybe about a quarter of what we made in a month. So enjoy from your people. So if you just convinced all your friends to give you $600, you know, you just won yourself.
Just do it in a roundabout way. You know,
I don't like contests. I rarely do it. And every time I've done a contest, I've been fucked over. So I'm not doing any more.
Yeah, I've been fucked over with that every contest because they just don't recognize any of the greatest talent that Miami has.
Well, I mean, those contests were right, but I'm talking about contests. No, it's just I've always been a situation where I catch the worst beats. It's like when you sit down at a poker table like and all you get are twos and sevens. God damn it. Like nothing else comes out.
Like when you were up first at the Magic City contest. Man,
that literally when I walked in, all the comics were laughing at me. And you walk in, I'm like, what? Did I spill something? What is going on? They go, like, check the lineup.
Doing,
and I'm
doing
like,
for you what the crowd's not going
to
do.
And I literally went, motherfucker. It was so bad that the girl who was not the host, she was just the announcer. She's like, next. And that's it. That's all she said. She said your name. And I said, the crowd wasn't warmed up at all. But she goes, who are you? I go, Eric Da Silva. She goes, you're first, right? I go, yeah. She goes, coño. And she just walked away. I'm like, fuck me, bro.
That's a great omen. That's a great omen.
That's comedy.
That's it. Like, you're fucked, dude. I'm not even going to try to. It's just bah and then out. I'm like, fuck me. So yeah, it's that I'm not doing contests anymore.
Unless
it's a TV, like I'll do Last Comic Standing. Yeah. Exposure and everything. Yeah.
Because even if you lose, you got to be on network television.
You got a credit. Oh, it's all bad. Your fucking bio just went up a line. But other than else, I'm not. Nah, fuck it. I'm doing it.
So I want to go back to your story that we left a while ago.
Sure.
So how did it go when you recorded your special in Miami?
Oh, it was great, man.
And which one was this? What was the name of this one?
This was Adorably Offensive. It's my first CD. You can get it on iTunes and Amazon and Spotify and everything else. And it's on Pandora too. So if you want to listen to it free, you can. But then you should buy it because my kids need diapers. So
do you get money from Spotify? Do they send you a check?
Yeah, I have a deal through my record producer. So they want every quarter I get a little check. Like, hey, you bought this is a number of people. I'm selling about 3 to 5 CDs a week, every other week. So
you seem to be a pretty business savvy Comedian. Or is Evelyn?
Evelyn is way more business savvy. I'm just a show pony that goes, "Yeehaw, my dick," and then she's like, "Now we're gonna put that online, and I know we get some sponsors." Like, she's really much more.
Yeah, she just messaged me and was like, "Yeah, what are some links? Like, tell me where I could find the podcast." And I'm like, "Huh, this is the first time I think anybody's ever done
it." Oh,
no,
she's a goddamn professional, sir. Yeah. I'm totally unprofessional. I think even a deterrent to my own career. But she keeps me on the straight and narrow.
Someone was telling me, actually, because, you know, listeners don't know, but it was a saga trying to get you on the podcast. You know, because then, you know, you had things going. And then someone was like, "Dude, you should have just texted Evelyn, then you definitely that would be just put right in the schedule."
No, I there a lot of times I was like, "Hey Evelyn, I gotta do this podcast," and she said, "Are you kidding me? You're doing this and you got this private show?" And I was like, "Oh shit, I can't do it that week, can I?" And I felt bad trying to cancel. Every time I was like, "Maybe we can't," I just could not get it. Even today, like, there was a bunch of things I had to just say, "Push that to Tuesday." I got it. I fought to get here today, and I was
that's
like,
"But if I went through Ev directly, then I would have just
gotten, you would have gotten this date easy.
She would have known. She would have known.
She would have perfectly fine." Yeah, but I fucked up. But so we did two tapings and two sold out shows. Because luckily I actually have a little bit of a fan base down here, so Sweet. It's very nice to, which I don't bother them for the most part. But whenever I like a big taping, I'll call the troops, you know. But the two tapings of one night. And it was an embarrassment of riches. It killed the sound guy was like, "Dude, this is sounded really good. Like, you got to pick and choose what you want, because it's just on top of the nine." And I didn't believe anybody until I was outside drinking a beer, and one of the waitresses comes up to me. She's like, "You're the guy who was just on," because I was getting ready to do the second show. And she's like, "You're the guy who was just on." I go, "Yeah." And she's like, "You're really funny." I go, "Thanks." She goes, no. "I work here every weekend. I see a lot of comedy. You were really funny." And that's when I realized, oh shit, like, if a Miami girl.
Yeah.
Then that was it. I thought, okay, I got this. And the album sounds really good. My only problem with the album is that it's my first album. I didn't really know. The producer asked me to deliver my jokes a certain way for the post-editing.
Yeah.
But he didn't edit it the way a CD should be edited. Not badly. The audio is fine for the most part. But there's some small breaks in between because he's used to producing CD music CDs and comedy, which should be like one after the other, after the other, after the other. So those pauses I did for him to be able to edit, he just kept the pauses in. So I was like, fuck. That was my only complaint. So the next CD is going to be much tighter. In terms of that, which is my final recording is October 18th. We're doing a small tour starting in Gainesville, coming down on October 18th. We'll end up here in Miami, and we'll be doing it at Artistic Vibes.
Nice.
Sweet. Very good.
It's a great venue. They got voted best mic.
Open mic. Open mic in Miami. I love Artistic Vibes. Dude. They're just the shit.
Fantastic.
I love the room. I love their themed shows. I feel like it's my home away from home. Like, I'm like, this is
I feel at home there too. Yeah, like, it feels like a, it doesn't feel like they say like, "Oh, you're family," and they really follow through with it. Yeah. You know, it's not some hollow thing. No, it's true.
I love the mood there. So, and they've been helping me record this CD since I first did the show at the Fillmore, as well, which was a whole fucking complication on its own. But so we're doing a final recording for the show October 18th. And if you want, you can go to either artistic-vibes.com or Eric Da Silva, ericdasilva.com. And it's a ticket link there, and go check it out.
Cool. I'm excited. Maybe, I don't know if I'll be in town for it, but if I am.
You son of a bitch.
Yeah. I'm getting out of Dodge before that. So.
Oh, good. Yeah. I don't want to get out of before the fucking nuke goes out. Reg, you're invited.
Sweet.
You can come on.
All right.
Just saying.
Yeah, I love AV, man. That place is a shit.
It's great. I think all the rooms here, like I said, Artistic Vibes is great. I think Speak has a different vibe for the most part. Yeah. You know, they don't overlap with each other. Mm-hmm. I think Taurus is a different thing. So I think as a comic, you literally have different outlets to kind of
like melting pot of like very different like sections or like audiences, and that's a very good way to gauge yourself.
Yeah, I feel like Taurus is more of a a little bit of either people who are more financially well off than every comic there, or people who have been beaten down by life.
And so a lot of alcohol problems there.
A lot of alcohol problems. Artistic Vibes is for a young, middle class, artsy, maybe 30 to 50 year old fans of live performances. And then you got Speak, which is sort of like that urban power, just connectivity with young kids who want to share a feeling, whether it's very peaceful and blissful, or the man doesn't understand my pain. And then you're like, I'm gonna listen to this shit. It's very, the worst part is, you know, when I got to follow a guy like that, I'm like, you just fucking, like, you dropped down like pain of hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to talk about my balls for like 5 minutes. And I hope it can be on the
That's
same
not
level.
An uncommon occurrence.
No, it's not.
I had one guy he wore this hockey mask and he was like, "Welcome to America," and he would just all these ridiculous political statements, right. And he would just say, "Welcome to America," and I went on after him and I'm like, "Man, I just really wanted to scream, 'Welcome to America,'" and everyone's like, I don't want to laugh because I feel like he might murder me.
That's it. Or you're mocking a man who just expressed, like, go fuck yourself with that mocking. That's what comedy's supposed to do. We're supposed to mock. That's the whole fucking point of the thing.
When you go to Speak, you have a lot of people are trying out poetry. You know, they're writing for the first time, or they've been writing for a while. Now, here's the thing. Here's a rule of thumb. If any poem refers to the moon, stars, rain, face, or soul, it's a shit poem. All right? Those subjects should never... No great poet talks about that stuff. All right? No, you look across... Maybe you'll find something about the rain, something, maybe one or two about the soul, but no. And anything talking about moon, rain, sun, stars, space, snow... soul... No, bad poem.
I actually got, I will tell you this one story about Speak. I got really mad.
And if you use the word perceive a lot, that's also what I noticed.
I perceive.
What we perceive is not what we see. Oh my God. Wow.
I wanted to start taking up funny poetry at Speak. Like, one, to challenge myself with writing, and to just attack the like
trope.
Yeah,
the tropes.
But if you have to attack the trope, but fully committed to the trope. You can't let people know this is you got to come in and just be, and people are like, what the fuck is this guy doing? And that's
doesn't he usually do comedy? What's going on?
This is actually a thing I did when I was first started doing comedy, like at clubs. Once I got kind of in the rotation, I would sign up for open mics and do weird comedy as an open micer, like fully committed to the open mic, not knowing who I am. And it was this one show, I went on stage in a wheelchair. And they told me it was my first time. He's a very special comedian. Please welcome, like, Alex, blah, 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 whatever my name was. And I told these really shitty jokes, but I was getting laughs because they felt bad for me because I was in a wheelchair. And then...
Please tell me. No, go on.
And then at the end, I went, you know what I hate, guys? Hypocrites. Oh, hypocrites are the worst, aren't they? And I was like, yeah. And I go, like, look at you guys. You guys are laughing at these horrible jokes I'm telling. Well, we all know it's not funny. I mean, I'm done with this. And I just stood up, folded my chair, and I walked
away. That's all I do. That's what you did at the end, but I wanted you to say
it. And it was great. It was complete silence for the audience, and the back of the room was losing it laughing. And that's exactly what I did it for, is for them to feel like a bunch of assholes.
That's amazing.
You gotta take your pop shots where you can. So that was my version of, like, fuck you, Miami. I hate you.
That's awesome.
But what made me very angry was I was at Speak one time, and it was a lot of people going on thanking their where they were in life to allow them to express themselves this way. Like, I'm going to Full Sail right now. I'm a rapper. He's a white guy. I'm going to Full Sail, the dopest schools, the games to teach me on it. And I'm going to spend it with some girls. Like, I'm a poet. My parents were allowing me to go to Harvard. And I literally went, fuck you people. That's not where art comes from. It doesn't come from a good education and thanking mommy and daddy. Art comes from, hey, everything I thought was right is wrong. I failed as a human being, and this is all I can do to tell you how it hurts.
But you only got a partial ride scholarship to Harvard, though.
Go fuck yourself even more. Trying to lie to me about your full ride, but it's only a partial ride. I don't want to hear, my parents had to work one job to help me get through college. Like, go fuck yourself.
But they couldn't go on that Italian vacation. They're going.
It doesn't matter. Go to fucking the little...
think about the trip to Tuscany they were supposed to take.
You can go to the Olive Garden. That's your fucking... I hope you go there. And you go, I was in Italy. Go fuck it. I hate... So it literally was making me so angry. I had to leave. I couldn't hear so many positive things before they expressed whatever art they had. I was like, that's not what I want to see. Like, I don't, whenever I see people who are too happy, I can't relate to them. You're like an illusion to me. Like, you're not telling me the thing that's interesting about you. Like, I'm driving here, Mike, and you live in this beautiful, you're a lady, live in a beautiful neighborhood. Yeah. If I didn't know that you had cancer, I would hate you. Like, this man has no idea what pain comes from. He doesn't know what fear smells like. And I'm like, yes, you did. So the fact that you are, I'm like, fuck, Mike is allowed to be this way. He has seen.
Don't worry, I kind of had a shitty childhood too. So.
Okay, good. Yeah. Then that makes me feel better. Like, goes, this is layering. It's interesting about you.
Because you can't, I don't think I've ever met a good comic that was like, yeah, my childhood was great and everything was good.
Yeah.
For the whole, never.
I know. I always say, people ask me, what makes a comedian? I go, a father figure that emotionally wasn't available. That's, if you knew your dad should be there and he wasn't, or he was, but he was too fucked up to be there, then they're like, oh, that guy's going to be a comic now. He's going to develop a sense of humor to defend himself through life. And that's how it's going to end
up. I think Dave Williamson, who's the football player that beat his kid? Adrian Peterson?
No, Rice is the guy who beat his wife.
Someone beat. Who's the guy that beat his kid? Guy.
It was too many football players beating up too many people this past week. Yeah, too much. I got lost in the names.
Yeah, Adrian Peterson. That's Adrian who it Peterson. Was.
Okay.
And Dave Williamson's like, Adrian Peterson's kid's going to be a great comic one day.
My rich daddy. My rich daddy beat me.
That's brilliant.
Then scored a touchdown. Said it was for me. Holy shit.
Or maybe
this isn't for you. You're not worth it.
You know, it's funny. My sister works in the child advocacy system. And I was like, you know, is it really that bad if, like, you know, he hits the kid on the butt with a tree branch? Like, and she's like, no, it is, because if you start beating people with inanimate objects, it means that it's progressed from a point. Like, there's a certain point of beating up, like, spanking your kids is okay, but it gets to a certain point that it's like, no, you can't be beating them with tree branches.
I don't think you should beat your kids. I think you should just give your kids to clumsy relatives and add to it. Like, you were a really shitty kid last weekend, so now you're going to hang out with Aunt Paula. Like, no, not Aunt Paula.
Yeah. She has Parkinson's.
She
loves to pick me up.
She just wants to twirl me, but she keeps hitting me on walls. Like, that's the best way to do it. Don't ever hit your kid, but if your kid's shitty, make them be taken care of by a clumsy relative, and you win. You win, you win, you win so much, it's not your fault.
So... I wanted to ask you. You were in New York for a while, right?
Right.
Was that after you recorded that thing, or was
actually it was after I recorded it. I stayed in New York for another year and a half, and then I had my second kid, and then all the numbers got fucked up, because
you had your first kid. How old was your first kid?
My kid, she just turned five. My first kid, yeah, kid one just turned five. And
I love how you refer to your kids as kids, kid one and kid two.
Yeah,
it's no idea what your kids' names are.
See, that's it. I don't want to put them out there until. I feel like they deserve it. Like, if I'm going to turn them in, like, I'm gonna go,
one more mess of SpaghettiOs and you cease to be kid one and you cease to be full legal name.
Kid one, we had her intentionally. We worked hard. We worked 2.5 years to get pregnant.
Wow.
What I didn't realize is that if you want to conceive a kid, you just have to be drunk or high and you have to be having sex. And like you were having sex in high school. Like, it's if you get caught, you're going to get in trouble. That's how you have to. Like, I don't know.
Ovulation's a lot easier.
It really is. It keeps the pheromones going and the testosterone, and you ejaculate harder, I guess. Because, like, we tried for 2.5 years, like, going to doctors, taking pills, measurement. Like, oh, the thermometer says it's time to do.
Yeah.
We did all that shit, nothing. And then we just said, fuck it. And we just got hammered and had sex like we hated our parents in high school.
Yeah.
And like 3 months later, she was pregnant. Like, it was it was that easy. I was like, wow, was this all we had to do?
Eric DeSilva, the fertility expert.
Yeah, fertility. You don't need a truth stick. You just need some Jaeger and some, hey, you want to fuck in a cab? Like, that's basically what that is. And then you get babies. That's how it totally happens. That's why there's so much teen pregnancy. You're not supposed to be fucking that hard. And it just shows up. You're like, oh, man,
the sperm only impregnates the egg when it knows it's doing something wrong.
Exactly. That's exactly it. If that is not on a condom somewhere, that should be like the morning.
So you moved to Miami after having the kid.
After having a kid too, and then
did you have family here?
Yeah, we got both her parents and my parents live here, so the grandparents are
and
here.
They could help you out with the kids.
Well, yeah, because that was the problem, is that I'm on the road about 2 to 3 weeks a month.
Yeah,
so when I started to go back on the road, you know, we did the numbers, and like having a nanny either live in or like someone that's going to be for most of the time was just going to be in New York. I mean, we're living in Manhattan, and I had a 2-bedroom apartment.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I was like, I had money for the lady, the apartment, our shit, the kid, the dog, period.
Yeah.
I had enough money to be just enough where we can go out on a date every once in a while and maybe order Chinese food the two times a month. It was a good life, modest life, but we had everything taken care of all just by doing stand-up. I was very happy with what I was doing.
That's fantastic. That's like a good, like, happy, healthy medium
that's
to reach
life. That's what I thought. That's what I thought. And then kid two came. And when kid two came, all the numbers were blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, fuck, I got to be on the road more. So I started to go on the road. And this is like the first or the second week that I was back on the road. I get a call. And she's like, this shit's not working out. Like, I have a 3-year-old and I have a newborn. I'm overwhelmed. And we don't have money for a nanny to help out.
Yeah.
What the fuck are we going to do? And so we had to look at the numbers. And then her parents and my parents started saying, well, you know, we'd love to see our grandkids. Why don't you just come down here? We'll help with the kids. You can stay on the road. Keep being on the road. And we did that. And that's been the thing. And now things are starting to level out. So we're thinking about maybe being here for, you know, a small X amount of time more than, you know, figuring out what we're going to do. Either staying here, like just keeping the family here and I just keep on traveling, or moving somewhere else depending on what gigs come up. So we'll see what happens.
I always say that unplanned pregnancies is what keeps the great talent in Miami, the Miami comedy scene.
That is probably the funniest thing you've ever said, Mike. That's probably, if that's not on your highlight reel, I don't know where that. Yeah, that's fucking brilliant. Yeah, you are absolutely right about
that.
Keeps
the talent here, you know.
Yeah. Vargas came back. I came back, you know. And if Vargas get, you know, I don't know if I want to drop the dime on this, but there's a possibility that Vargas is going to be moving to LA.
I'm going to be moving to LA too.
Are you really? When are you moving to LA?
Whenever Christine gets a job.
All right, there you go. So you're not even, this is not even like, hey guys, we're on DEFCON 4. Like, it could happen at any moment. Like, you could be out of a podcast, Reggie, at any moment.
Holy shit.
Yeah. We're going to start doing, we got to do a practice Skype podcast soon.
Skype, over the phone Skypes, they're a little bit tricky. Just giving you a heads up.
We're going to try it. We're going to figure out
something. But obviously you have all the technical setup that you should be able to.
Yeah, what I was going to probably do is have him record like a scratch track with Skype and then actually record it into like GarageBand, and then he sent me the file so it sounds like we're in the same room together. So it's like,
so basically it's gonna be the most scripted unscripted podcast of all time. Is Reggie going, you know what I find interesting? Oh, no, you go ahead. Oh yeah.
no you go okay, all right, cool.
I don't want to interrupt, but okay, as a black man, and it's basically the moment's there, and you just go in and you're porn.
Well, maybe I'll just get Christine pregnant, and then we don't have
there
to
there you go, about. Guys. Look at that. Florida, taking down another one.
I'm not going to say who, but one comic was looking at another comic's timeline who just had a baby, and she's like, oh, look at that little career killer.
No.
Look at that little career killer coming through.
I know a lot of comics that when they find out they're having a kid, they're like, oh, man, he could have been somebody. Luckily, the weird thing is in New York, there's so many of us that started having kids.
Yeah.
That it went from like, well, that guy's fucked, to like, oh, maybe he's got a chance. Because when it happens to one guy, it's a sad statistic. When it happens to enough of you, it is now some sort of niche market. They just created is enough comics for procreating. Like, okay, now they can appease a whole marketplace. There's actually a guy in New York called Miguel Damalu. I hope I'm not pronouncing his name wrong. That he does a show called The Dads of Comedy. It's a showcase show that he does.
Yeah.
All the comics are fathers, and it's all variations of, you know, being a dad and that kind of stuff. And that's, you created a niche right there, just because enough comics just wanted, thought they knew what love was and wanted to fuck a girl, and that's what happened. So,
and that's how comedy talent stays where it's supposed to go.
Yeah. And I'll tell you this though, being a dad changed my entire act completely. This is the comic I am today is not the comic I intended on being. I wanted to be like a Bill Hicks type of political edgy comic was going to change the world.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until after I had my first kid and I was like about a year and a half in and I realized I had no idea what the fuck I was doing. I just got so overwhelmed that I ended up getting booked to do a show at this club called Comics. And halfway
with an X, right?
With an X, right. Ooh. They're closed now. Not because of me though. I was doing this 15-minute set and about 6 minutes in, I just like abandoned my act and like had like a nervous breakdown on stage essentially, where I just started like telling people like you don't know how it feels, and I just started talking about my problems really, and it was like about 2 or 3 minutes of like just dead silence and just people taking in all the shit that was coming out. And then around minute 3 or 4, people started chuckling, and then by the 15 minute set there was a huge applause break.
Wow.
And I was almost like mad at the audience for laughing at me. And when I walked out, once again, the guy was booking the show grabs my shirt and pulls me over. It's one of those moments where people feel the need to pull me somewhere to tell me something.
You have
intense.
A few of those moments.
I have a few of those moments, yeah. Pulls me over and he goes, I don't know what the fuck you just did, but that's what you do from now on. From now on, you do that. That is the thing that you do. And I just became, that's why I'm very like brutally honest about anything that goes through my head, because that, if I don't feel passionately about something, I just don't even talk about it anymore, because that's not what people want to hear from me some reason. They want to hear me angry and really give a shit about, no matter how fucked up the thing is, they want to hear me give a shit about it. And if I don't give a shit about it, for me, it doesn't work
out. And they won't give a shit. They won't give a shit about it.
But you, that's it. I like, there's comics I know who are clean. There's comics I know who are just observational. And I'm so jealous of those guys because I don't know how to do that. Like, it doesn't work for me. My comedy works when I'm angry and my brain goes to fucked up places. That's the thing where people like really resonate. And there's that, I mean, I always say, if you book me for a show, you're going to lose between 9 to 18% of your audience. You're going to lose it. I'm going to make them go away. But the remaining 88% or 82% will love the fuck out of me. But you have to be willing to lose that 12 to 18%.
You gotta take the Eric DaSilva leap.
Yeah, the Eric DaSilva leap. Like, I'm like, listen, you're gonna lose a pinky, but the rest of you is gonna be awesome, and you just gotta make that move, man. And it's just a weird thing. It's just I know when I'm gonna perform, unless I'm doing a theater show. Theater shows, people are invested in seeing me, but if I do like a room or something, I lose about 12 to 18% of the audience. Like, I know if I lose less than that, I'm actually proud of myself. I was like, look at that, I can convince more people to stay. but that's that. And then those people, I always point out right before the show ends, look how many people left, because they're not as awesome as you. And the crowd almost feels like, I enjoyed the show and I'm a better person for it. Like, it's, and then
I'm a better person than them.
Yeah. And then because of that, they buy my shit after the show. So they'll buy my t-shirt and my CD, and I'll make a little scratch. Just for making them feel better about themselves, for laughing at horrible, horrible things.
Point taken. All right, so I feel like that's a great note to end the podcast on.
There you go.
It's been fun, Eric. Yeah, had an awesome time.
Thank you so much. I hope I didn't talk all the time. Like, I feel like
we have a guest on. We like it when they talk all the time. So
it's easy, you guys.
And you have a lot of interesting things to say. You know, it's like you've been doing it for a while, and you
blended
going into the podcast.
Into
I wanted to learn about the history of Eric DaSilva. So I feel like we accomplished that.
There you go. And guys, please don't forget October 18th.
Yes,
not a beautiful mind. Go to ericdasilva.com or artistic-vibes.com. Get your tickets. I think they're 15 pre-sale, but if you use a promo code BADDADS, it's only 10. So,
and the Bad Dad podcast.
Dad's podcast.
That's one of the best podcasts in South Florida.
You're adorable.
For sure.
Thank you. I just like to think that we're better than WooBro. That's all. That's all it is. I don't need much. Just that.
All right. Where can the people find you online?
You can find me online at the Silva Comic. That's my Twitter handle. You can go to baddadspodcast.com or ericdasilva.com. And all our social media stuff are there. You can just click on that and it'll take
you right
there.
Spotify, we could find you. Pandora.
Spotify, Pandora.
All over the place.
Yeah, iTunes, wherever you want. iTunes is for the podcast and for my album. I'm all over the place. So please check it out. Send a nice message. Follow me. And if you leave all 5-star reviews for the podcast, we send you free swag. So, if you might get like a magnet and a t-shirt and a bunch of stuff. So,
magnet,
you know,
and a t-shirt? All
right. Yeah, so I'm just saying.
2 5-star reviews from
leave me. Leave you 5-star reviews, you get shit, man. That's
sweet.
All I'm saying.
All right, guys. So until next time.
Until next time.